Welcome to the Building Doctor Show with Jens Johansson.
Q&A, we got five questions. All right. And these don't have to be about the show. These can also, you know, bring your question and we can get on that. So let's see. How can we get AC contractors to pick up and take old and surplus AC parts, especially metal materials that are left on flat rooftops that get impeded into the roof and cause leaks? Yeah, I see it all the time. This is, you're talking about rooftop units. There's, you know, reaches into his bag to get a screw and four others fall out. And then he steps on those screws and the screws puncture the membrane, or replacing fan hoods. He just leaves it up there, leaves the old one up there. You know, I think that nobody's up there to see the roof and they can just kind of leave their debris up there. Or maybe it's too hard to get down and that wasn't in their bid or something. But making sure, write that into the contract. All old material will be taken off and the roof membrane will be protected from puncture and abuse. And
now, are these AC units being installed by somebody that the HOA has hired, or are they being installed by different contractors that different owners have hired? I think the answer to this question is different in those scenarios. What I see a lot is the rooftop mounted HVAC. So what I see a lot is the TPO flat roof is a common element and the association maintains it. And then you've got these limited common element pads with the AC units on top. And then you have owners onesie twosie hiring different AC contractors that come up on the roof and they're not roofers and the screws fall out of their bag or whatever. If it's that you have different AC contractors coming on the roof, causing damage to your roof, there's a couple things you can do about that. Am I okay to answer this, Jens?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing you're referring to is, you know, hey, I want to put a downdraft super range hood in my unit. So I'm going to have my kitchen contractor go up to the roof and do some ductwork, or I'm going to add an AC or heat pump to my unit. And I'm going to go up to the roof and do, my guy's going to be on our roof. And so
this is an architectural review issue that's particular to condos.
Yep.
And you as a board or a manager can control a lot of this in the course of approving the application. So the first and most important thing is you got to get your roof inspected periodically, because it's a really expensive building system. And if somebody's on that roof that the HOA didn't hire that's causing damage, the sooner you know about it, the better. Right, Jens?
Yep. Yep.
The second thing is, when an owner submits an application for that, you know, hood, that vent for their range exhaust or whatever, you just said it, Jens. It's been a long day.
Their jacuzzi.
Their jacuzzi or their AC. You can approve the application with conditions. One of the conditions should be that the contractor lists the association as an additional insured on their liability for both ongoing and completed operations.
Yes.
And I'm not going to go into the weeds on that, but that means that if they damage your roof, you can file a claim on their insurance, not the building's insurance.
Yep.
The other thing is, a lot of associations have chargeback provisions. So if you send a vendor onto the roof and they damage the roof and the association has to pay for repairs to the roof, you can assess the owner who was negligent in managing their contractor the cost of repairing that roof. So there are some things that you can do, but they start and stop with inspecting the roof frequently. And a lot of my clients that have these rooftop mounted HVAC systems, they do a before inspection and an after inspection. Yep. And that's how they identify problems. Sorry to go on and on, but it's an interesting question.
it's a good delineation between those two things. And, you know, a couple of things I'll add. If you're having J2 do a spring and fall inspection for you, we're going to be up there every 6 months. But it's also, I've read a lot of bylaws that don't have that chargeback provision. So call Jason and he can help you put that into there. So I think we answered that. The next one's funny. What if I already panicked and deleted all my records as you were talking? Well, No, I feel for you because I do, again, I do want some of my records. I do want those plans.
Is anything ever really completely deleted anymore? I'm not sure that it is.
And then that too. So we're just going to have to work harder digging through your cell phone records. So thanks for that. How likely is it that any HOA will get subpoenaed in their lifetime? Oh, interesting question. A lot of my clients get that. Yeah.
So, it's rare that you would get a subpoena because, again, a subpoena is when a non-party gets a demand for information or testimony. It is more frequent that an HOA is involved in some sort of litigation and a representative has to provide testimony or documents. But I've had HOAs get subpoenaed in like plumbing class action lawsuits where the plumbing contractor that's getting sued asked for some records because they found out that building happened to have that particular plumbing system. It happens once in a while, but not super often.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. Do we always have the right to turn people away from a meeting if they don't live there? Good question.
Oh. Simple what? Answer. No.
No.
Okay. A little more information. So there isn't a lot of case law anywhere, Oregon, Washington, or around the country about who can and can't attend an HOA meeting. But you can adopt a rule that prohibits media attendance.
Okay.
You can always adjourn the meeting if someone is there that you don't want to be there. You can adjourn the meeting and schedule it for another time when your lawyer can be there or when this person that's showing up isn't going to be there. Mm-hmm. With regard to the people that are in this gray area, like brother-in-law, like mom and dad are elderly and have poor hearing and the son doesn't live there, but he's there with them. I like to err on the side of generosity. I like to let those people stay at the meeting right up until the point where they're disrupting board business. Right. And then I kick them out. You know, I even sometimes have a conversation with them. Like, they do the sign in, they don't own the unit. I say, look, you know, mom and dad are elderly. I understand you're their caretaker. But you know, you can't get out of hand in this meeting. If you do, we're going to kick you out. The reason I say no is because, a lawyer can't turn a lawyer away from a meeting. If they represent an owner, they have a right to be there. They're that person's attorney. In fact, somebody that holds a valid power of attorney over real estate matters for an owner has a right to be there. Gotcha. So some of those people you can't turn away, but the media you can turn away. And somebody that isn't a lawyer or doesn't have a power of attorney, I usually like to let them stay right up until the point where they're disruptive.
What about, and the next question asks resident. And so I'm careful about owner versus tenant.
Resident. Yeah.
Resident. And so I just live there. Yeah. I'm not an owner. And so what about residents or tenants? You know, I guess, part of me says, well, I want them involved to understand what's going to be happening, but I'm not going to be asking for their vote or they don't have a right to vote. And so, and like you said, as long as they're not interrupting or disrupting the meeting.
You know, tenants get a really bad rap in condos and HOAs. There are some bad tenants, right? It's inherently a more transactional relationship because they don't own there. They're just renting there. It's shorter term.
Right.
And so there's this perception among a lot of board members that tenants don't care about the property. Mm-hmm. In my experience, most tenants like living there.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they're just as respectful and clean as your owners, and in some cases more. So there are bad tenants. There are also bad owners. And so I like to let them attend. You know, like let's say you're replumbing your building or something, and that you have a long-term tenant, someone that's lived there for 5 years, loves living there, knows their neighbors. They don't have a legal right to be at the meeting, but you want them there because you know it's going to be disruptive and they're a member of the community. I just like to be clear about you don't get to vote. If you want to have your 3 minutes and ask a few questions about what to expect during construction, I usually allow that because it's just the classy right thing to do. And you want the tenant to feel like they're a member of the community, but they don't get to vote.
Right. Yep. Okay. And the last question is, let's see, I'm reading through the chat real fast.
They don't vote.
We just got another one. As a resident, what are my options if I'm not asked for input before a major vote? That's interesting.
Well, so there's two different answers, and it depends on what you mean by resident.
So let's say as an owner, what are my options if I'm not asked for input?
Well,
major vote.
So if it's a board decision, then you really don't have a right to have input because only the board gets to vote, make motions, call seconds, call points of orders on a board decision.
Okay.
If it's an owner decision, and this is some, I don't want to get too technical with Robert's Rules of Order, but this is a Robert's Rules of Order thing. If it's an owner vote and you're in an owner's meeting and it takes 2/3 of the owners to authorize the special assessment, you absolutely have a right to be recognized and debate the motion and cast your vote on an owner decision. And if it is an owner decision and you're in an owner meeting and the board is not allowing you to make a comment, you can call a point of order. And a point of order is one of the mechanisms under Robert's Rules of Order that allows you to challenge the procedural steps in the meeting. And so let's say you say, point of order, Mr. Chair, I would like to be recognized as an owner before we call for an owner vote. And the chair says, I'm not recognizing you. And then what do? You ask for an appeal. So the chair generally gets to decide points of orders. They're the initial decision maker, to use the term from your industry, Jens.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's an appeal, then the assembly, all of the owners that are there, get to decide, you know, fully and finally by a majority vote, whether you get to speak or not. So you could call for an appeal. So that's if you're an owner. If you're a tenant, you really don't have a legal right to provide input. But again, there's what you have the legal right to do. And then there's what is good politics, what is good community building. Right. And when I'm chairing these meetings, if there's a long-term tenant, somebody that cares, somebody that's obviously respectful and not going to be disruptive, I always encourage the board to let them say a few words because it's just the right thing to do.
Yep. Okay, last question. How do you politely make sure they don't vote? Ooh.
Well, you don't have to be polite about it. in a owner's meeting, like, because in a board meeting, only the 3 or 5 or 7 board members get to vote. And if they're sitting at the front of the room, everybody knows who they are. And when you call for the vote, if you're recording the votes of the directors and somebody in the audience wants to cast their vote, it's painfully obvious to everyone in the room that the person in the audience doesn't have a right to vote. So that doesn't usually happen. But sometimes you have a tenant show up to a meeting and want to vote. And the way you deal with that is with a sign-in sheet. And sometimes it's a sign-in sheet, and as people sign in and you verify that they're on the owner roster, you hand them their ballot. And so you know that the only people in the room that have ballots are people that actually live there and they're members of the association. They get to vote. The other way to do a vote is, this is a fancy term, right? A viva voce vote, which is just a fancy way of saying roll call.
Right. So gotcha. Yep.
Everybody signs in at the meeting. And so you know who's there in person and by proxy. And I've done this over Zoom lots of times. I have a condo hotel client. I, you know, run their annual meeting for years, and a bunch of people show up to the meeting. I know who's there after sign-in. And then we go down the list. Okay, Jane Doe, how do you vote? Yay or nay? Joe Schmo, pull yourself off mute. How do you vote? Yay or nay? I was going to say this earlier, but I have also seen some associations that meet over Zoom use the polling feature to vote.
Hmm.
Although that's a little fraught because you could potentially have somebody on the call that casts their vote that isn't an owner. And that's why it's triply important that you do a sign-in sheet or a roll call vote.
Gotcha.
So you don't really need to be polite about it. It's just you never ask them to cast their vote because you're going down the list. You either gave them a ballot or you didn't, or you're going down the list and you're recording their verbal vote.
Gotcha.
And if they insist on, voting, you can politely say, well, I'm sorry, you're not an owner. And so we're happy to have you here, but we're not going to record your vote. XOXO, JLG.
Viva voce. Okay.
Viva voce.
All right. Great questions, everybody. We are long. So thank you so much for your patience sticking in there. Giveaway time. We have some giveaways. Let's see. I know J2 is putting out a, it's cold out. So we got a J2 beanie. We got a thermos coffee mug. We've got package of coffee in there, J2 brew, and some other good little trinkets. And how we do this, Jason, is we pick a number between 1 and 10. I'm going to pick, I don't know, 5. So then what's your giveaway? And then you pick that same kind of number between 1 and 10. And
so mine's nowhere near that fancy. Mine's just a $50 Amazon gift card, but I need your email to email it to you.
Gotcha.
So is there a way to get this person's email?
So Ben, what Ben does is he sees a list of all the participants and then he sees that number 5 that I picked. So you pick that number and he will reach out and get their email and get that to you. And then you can send it to him.
Then I'll make sure that you get your gift card. Okay. I'm going to pick lucky number 7.
Lucky number 7. All right. There we go. Thanks for playing. Did you know we have free resources for boards and managers? Check it out. learn.j2consultants.com/resources. Over 300 videos out there. Stream this webinar wherever you go. We're on iTunes and whatever the podcast things are out there. And don't forget, we'll be back live each month. We traditionally do this on the last Tuesday of every month. Last Tuesday of December is going to be Christmas week. So we're going to have a really good best of 2023. And stay tuned for that. You'll see, you'll get the recaps and Jason might make it because this was actually a really good one. But thank you for having me. Yep. Thank you for attending. You gave us lots of great information. You're always a pleasure to talk to. Everybody in the audience realizes that you have a lot of experience. And so reach out to Jason if you have his. If you have these questions, and again, feel free to reach out to me and we can steer you in that right direction. So thank you again, Jason. Do you have any closing words?
No, thanks for having me. A great crowd. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Good night.